And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a buckling building frightened tenants in Portland yesterday.
Measure 26 is experiencing a big holdup.
U.S. ecologists sue the border wall.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, April 12th, 2017. I'm Brian Pritchett.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. Yesterday morning, Portland fire and police crews quickly evacuated a 10-story Wells Fargo building on Fifth Avenue after the building began cracking and crumbling in several places, eventually bulging on its side. Rescue crews cordoned off the entire block surrounding the building. The cause of the building's damage is still unknown. The first call came in to Fire Lieutenant Rich Chapman around 11 a.m. April 11th, when people in the building began reporting falling debris. Some office workers reported that a loud crack was heard and had presumed it was ongoing construction nearby. KinderCare, OHSU, eBay, FedEx Office, and 24 Hour Fitness are some of the businesses who are tenants of the building owned by Portland's Melvin Mark Companies under the Mark Group Partnership No. 6.
Among the many proposals on the Oregon ballot this past November was Measure 26-184. The bill set limits on campaign contributions and expenditures and also requires that the top five contributors be identified in any communication to voters regarding candidates in Multnomah County elections. The bill, publicly endorsed by many elected officials and passed overwhelmingly with 297,000 in favor and only 38,000 opposed. So you would assume that any measure favored by nearly 90% of the voters would be quickly implemented. But that's not the case. Last week, the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners submitted the measure for judicial review, a process that could significantly slow down its enactment. KBOO's Ray Bodwell spoke with David Delk of the Alliance for Democracy about the situation.
Was Measure 26-184 among the many proposals on the Oregon ballot this past November. The bill set limits on campaign contributions and expenditures, and we will come back to that story in just a minute. With an increase in prison populations, Oregon lawmakers are torn between building a new prison or creating tactics to lower prison populations. The Safety and Savings Act was drafted to deter prison populations with alternative lenient sentences. Oregon News Service has more.
Alliance for Democracy, and the Alliance for Democracy is a national organization.
One part of our mission
is ending corporate domination, and another part is creating true democracies.
David, ballot measure 26-184 was specifically intended to limit campaign contributions and try to bring transparency to the financing of Multnomah County elections. It had overwhelming support, with residents favoring it by nearly 9-1. Yet an issue has arisen that may be slowing it down. What's going on?
The issue is that the city attorney has asked the county commission to approve sending it to the courts for a determination about constitutionality. And the county commission voted 4-0. To give them approval to do that. We don't object necessarily to this going to the courts at this point, but what we want to have is the issue is that the city attorney has asked the county commission to approve sending it to the courts for a determination about constitutionality. And the county commission voted 4-0 to give them approval to do that. We don't object necessarily to this going to the courts at this point. But what we want to have is the county attorney to support and advocate for the measure as it was written and approved by the voters. What the city attorney said was that they were going to send it to the courts and be neutral on it, which is not the typical way that these cases go. Somebody has to advocate for it, and our position is that it is the responsibility, because the voters approved this, it is the responsibility of the city attorney to do that. The county commissioners felt more like, well, there's some question about what we should enforce, and it would be nice and perhaps cheaper if we took it to the courts now for a determination about that. The city attorney said that in the 25 years that she's been the city attorney, that this has never happened before. They have never taken anything that the voters passed to the courts for to test its validation. So very, very, very unique.
David, do you have a concern that there is backroom politics or other political self-interest at play that is slowing this down?
I hesitate to speculate about that. I don't know. I think that the county commissioners were sincere in wanting to get clarity about what can and cannot be enforced. I think that it's possible that the city attorney just doesn't want to do the work that's necessary to actually advocate for the measure. I think that the right way to do this is to actually implement and enforce the measure and then see if it is challenged by anybody. If it is challenged, then it would be up to the or the responsibility for the city attorney to actually go ahead and defend the measure in the courts if it came to that.
The next meeting of the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners is scheduled for 9:30 tomorrow morning at the County Commissioners Boardroom at 501 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard in Portland. Interested listeners are urged to join David Delk and the Alliance for Democracy, who will be there to push for quick enactment of the Multnomah County campaign finance law. For KBOO, this is Ray Bodwell.
Quantas Hayes was fatally shot by police officer Andrew Hurst in February with an AR-15 rifle. Hayes' family, along with Don't Shoot Portland and other community organizers, are demanding that the case be put before a federal court. KBOO's Teresa Mitchell spoke with Donna Hayes, Quintus Hayes' grandmother, about the case.
You tried to talk to the city council earlier today?
No, that was last Wednesday.
Oh, last Wednesday.
Uh-huh. And so they wouldn't let me. They wouldn't let me go at 2 o'clock, neither time. So what we did, we went over to the process and got a councilwoman to okay it. And so I got May 24th at 2 o'clock. They told me 10:05, but they changed it to 2 o'clock, which I'm glad. Because, the gentleman that was, it's the anniversary of a man that was, a young man, I think he was like either 22 or 25, was killed by police. They drug his name through the mud, talked about he was had a felony and that he was a criminal and drug addict. But they shot him. Okay, they say they give a warrant. So they having that on the 24th. So they'll be able to come after that march they having on the 24th because it's at 2 o'clock. But for me, I'm looking forward to coming to the city council because I let my daughter do the talk. It was her child that she lost. But I lost something too. That was my grandchild. That was a close grandchild of mine. You know, he's up in age. We could talk. We had an understanding, you know. I knew he loved me. And I lost him. On his knees with his hands in the air. I read the transcripts. It's so many conflicting views. In the last one that I read, because I haven't went past 275, I'm having a hard time with it, the chief came down and said, Well, when they lied and said, oh, only one person was speaking at the time, the chief said, I heard everybody speaking. So we got a child on his knees with his hands up in the air, confused. They got a person, the only person with a lethal, that does lethal, the lethal weapon, was a person that had it last time that the government is in on because of him. You know, why would they give him a gun? They could have gave anybody on the planet a gun other than him. Let him hold a beanbag or the taser. Because I'd rather see my grandson hit with a beanbag, whining and complaining about how slow he is, or the taser that he'll remember to chill every time he think about it. I'd rather have that, because he would have been alive. We'd have had something to talk about. Yeah, I told him he was on his knees. They gave different descriptions of he was squatting, he was on his knees, he was on his belly. What's true? We had one policeman saying, let me go through my notes. So he got notes. What I don't understand is the grand jury process. I don't understand it. It's one way for policemen and another way for other people. Because other people, you cannot be there. You cannot have a lawyer there. But he can be there. He had his lawyer there. He had the union there.
So he had representation, and we had none. He was my great-grandson. None. We weren't there. We weren't permitted to participate in it at all.
And now the big lie that's going around now is the police officer said, I told him that he shouldn't be carrying a replica gun. That's a lie.
Okay. Was it the same cop that shot him with a rifle that said that?
No, this was another female there. I talked to that lady. She talked to my daughter on the night that my grandson was sitting in a stolen car. His friend had stolen a car, and he's sitting in the passenger seat. That's all he was. That's all they told us. Oh, he was just sitting in the passenger seat. We're sending him home. So he was coming to my house. I'm staying with my mother. He was coming to our house. I had called his uncles and everybody coming. Come on and get Moose because he can't stay here. It's not enough room. First of all, he never made it to the house. After they said that they seen him, and I called a couple of times. They said, oh, he should almost be there. But he never made it. But never once did they mention a replica gun. I think that would have been important to tell his mother he's sitting in a stolen car with a replica gun. But they didn't tell her. So I don't believe it was he had a replica gun in that car.
So you were calling this afternoon, you're calling for a national investigation?
Yes.
That's what we want.
We want the federal government to investigate. This is bull. This is the same man they had to come in and investigate before. So I don't understand why they're not jumping into this right away. We got big idiot back here shooting up people again.
Yeah, they filed suit against Portland, the federal government, for the same thing, misbehaving with the police.
And it involved that man, Andrew Hurst, and two other people. It involved them. And now he's back into another one. And they should be back. Because I guarantee you, give him 3, 4, 5 more years, somebody else going to be die at his hands. Because this man got a taste of blood, and he loved it. I can't.
Anytime he can shoot a child on their knees, he loved killing.
And
he really does.
Okay, they didn't even tell us he was shot in the head. We got the death certificate, and that's how we found out. They never told us anything. You know, we didn't find out that he was dead for hours. Hours. I found out his girlfriend got in touch with me on Facebook. And so I got in touch with the rest of the family, and we got in touch with Venus. Because I called the police department. They wouldn't give me no information. They wouldn't let me come down. Nothing. And I'm like, okay, you dealt with me before. Why can't I come? And so we got Venus, and we went down there. Because we didn't want to tell Venus that her son was dead until we found out it was true. It was a horrible feeling when we sat there and they showed that picture. And they knew that was him. They could have contacted us. This happened in the morning. This is evening, night, dark outside. How come we just now finding out? And if all our information, we found out on the news.
And the one that was with the guy that shot him, he said, I remember him from way back when we got him in a stolen car. If he remembered him, why couldn't he tell us? He was there when they shot him.
That was a female.
And, well, a female or male. But there, recognized him. Why couldn't they tell the family?
Mm-hmm. Portland keeps everything as a dirty little secret. You know, that little boy, Christopher, I cannot pronounce his last name. We got a blog, a little article, and he gone on, he puffed the magic dragon. He's gone. We don't hear nothing else about it. How I found out that he's still in people's mind was I'm sitting on Facebook again, and they having a memorial 1 year from his death. All these shootings, I think it's all what they're doing to keep it quiet because they don't want to mess with tourism. They don't want to mess with the people that's coming and moving in. Them big old tall buildings they're building in North Portland, Northeast Portland, they got to be filled. We can't afford them. So they got to be filled. So let's not scare the people. Let them keep coming.
With an increase in prison populations, Oregon lawmakers are torn between building a new prison or creating tactics to lower prison populations. The Safety and Savings Act was drafted to deter prison population with alternative, lenient sentences. Oregon News Service has more.
As the population at Oregon's sole women's prison swells, lawmakers are left with a choice. Should the state build a new women's prison or consider alternatives to lowering the prison population? A bill known as the Safety and Savings Act gets a hearing in the Oregon House Judiciary Committee today. It would divert women convicted of drug and property crimes to intensive supervision programs and addiction and mental health treatment instead of prison. Shannon White with the Partnership of Safety and Justice says these alternatives could make the state safer. As she puts it, addiction doesn't respond to being thrown in a cell.
Even police officers are seeing they're arresting the same person day after day after day. You know, they might arrest the same person 20, 30 times, and it's not changing their addiction. So actually the more effective way to create safety is to both hold folks accountable, but also get them the treatment services they need.
From 2007 to 2015, the women's incarceration rate in Oregon increased by 22%, and 70% of women's convictions in 2015 were for drug and property crimes. In December, the Oregon Legislature's Emergency Board rejected a Department of Corrections request to open a former prison in Salem to house more women. The Safety and Savings Act would help maintain justice reinvestment programs, the county-level diversion programs that are alternatives to prison. It would also amend the family sentencing alternative to include pregnant women in a program that keeps mothers with custody of their children out of prison and under intensive supervision. White thinks investing in a new women's prison is the wrong way to spend state money, particularly given the population that would be affected.
Women, most of whom are mothers, most of whom have been victims of assault or sexual assault themselves, spending nearly $20 million a biennium when we could put those resources into things that actually would make our community safer would be a really bad use of our state resources.
White points to the state's $1.8 billion deficit as another reason to avoid building a new prison. The hearing on House Bill 3078 is today at 1 p.m. at the state capitol. For Public News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Organizations that track hate crimes say that physical and verbal attacks have increased months since the election of Donald Trump, and many target religious minorities. FSRN's Sean Kinane reports that in Florida, Jewish community centers have been receiving bomb threats and mosques have been targeted by arsonists.
For decades, Florida has been a choice destination for both U.S.-born and immigrant populations, making the Sunshine State home to a diverse population. But lately, religious minority residents have been made to feel less welcome. This month, a man holding an AK-47 verbally threatened a Muslim family in Jacksonville, Florida. He was arrested and charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. Wilfredo Ruiz, communications director for the Florida chapter of the Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, says incidents like these and actual attacks are concerning.
It's a life-threatening situation. Somebody eliciting racial slurs, U.S. Muslim, you need to get out of this country while holding a weapon is no joke. It is something very threatening.
Ruiz says Islamophobic incidents have increased dramatically over the last year, especially in Florida.
Last year, we experienced in Florida a 500% increment in hate incidents, hate crimes, while the rest of the country, the FBI reported that they had a 67% increase. We in Florida reported 500%.
In February, someone set fire to the outer door of a mosque on the outskirts of Tampa. Despite investigations by federal and local agencies, no one has been caught. The city's mayor, Bob Buckhorn, offered a swift condemnation.
There are tens of thousands of Tampanians who do not happen to be Muslim, but today stand with our Muslim community and say, not on my watch, not in my city. We will not tolerate this. We will stand up in the face of opposition. We will stand up in the face of anybody who would choose to demonize anybody for any reason, specifically and directly because of their religion. This is America. Our America. Their America. We don't tolerate that.
In February, a man pleaded no contest to charges of setting fire to a different Florida mosque in 2015. He faces 30 years in prison. But it's not just Muslims who have to worry about hate crimes. Anti-Semitic attacks are on the rise as well, as Mayor Buckhorn points out.
This is no different than the wave of anti-Semitic attacks on Jewish community centers and synagogues and bomb threats that have been called in all across the country, including in Tampa, over the recent months.
As with the mosque fires, there have also been vandalism attacks targeting symbols of the Jewish community. Gravestones have been destroyed or toppled in Jewish cemeteries in St. Louis, Philadelphia, and Rochester, New York in recent months. Ryan Lenz, senior reporter for the Southern Poverty Law Center's Intelligence Project, attributes the spike to the rhetoric from the presidential campaign.
From November 9th to March 31st, there were a total of 97 bias incidents that we've tracked in Florida alone. Six were targeting Muslims, 22 were anti-Semitic in nature, and 11 of them were instances of swastikas being spray painted in an act of vandalism. I think those causes are quite clear at this point. You know, the alternative right or the alt-right has risen to a level of prominence ushered in on the wave of this last presidential campaign. And they seem pretty intent on making sure that the ideologies that were mainstreamed over the course of the campaign don't leave the public eye anytime soon. I think it's a troubling reality that we're dealing with here, these continued bias incidents. And it's going to take a lot more than someone saying, I just disavow these groups, than to make it go away.
Nationwide, the Southern Poverty Law Center documented more than 100 phoned-in bomb threats to Jewish community centers in January and February alone. In March, one suspect was arrested, a Jewish citizen of both Israel and the United States living in Israel. It's unclear if authorities suspect he is responsible for all of the threats, but what is clear is that the spike in anti-Islamic and anti-Semitic threats and attacks likely won't end anytime soon. Sean Canaan, FSRN, Tampa, Florida.
To no Portlander's surprise, the biannual report from Portland City Auditor Mary Caballero says the city needs to spend more money on infrastructure, especially streets and sewers. While the city is making significant investments in water, sewer, and stormwater assets, most transportation infrastructure is in fair to poor condition, the report said. The city's overall financial health is stable, with increased revenues up 13% in 2 years, plus lower debt, a balanced budget, and strong credit ratings. But that stability is threatened by insufficient action, as repairing a street in poor condition can cost more than triple what a street in fair condition would.
Local activists were banned last night from a debate at Lewis and Clark featuring Jessica Vaughn, the director of policy studies at the Washington, D.C.-based Center for Immigration Studies, or CIS, an organization deemed a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. The other participant in the debate was Gayla Ruffer of Northwestern University's Center for Forced Migration Studies. Citing concerns about disruption and student safety, the college, whose events are almost always open to the public, limited the event to students and faculty. Hours before the debate began, it was moved to a larger auditorium with a live stream offered so that non-students could watch. Protesters from Portland Resistance marched outside the building, slowing the entry of some audience members, and their chants could be heard inside during the debate. While avoiding the explicit language of white nationalism, Vaughn's proposal for handling the refugee crisis echoed the Trump administration, developing safe zones in home countries rather than taking refugees into the United States.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Right to Survive at 6. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. On the horizon for Portland, weather is showers tonight and tomorrow, an overnight low of 45 and a high Thursday of 55, with a little more rain and slightly lower temperatures in Hood River. Today in history, in 1861, Confederate forces shelled Fort Sumter in Charleston Harbor, beginning the Civil War. And today's quote comes from a central figure in that war, Abraham Lincoln. Nearly all men can stand adversity, but if you want to test a man's character, give him power.
T.S. Eliot wrote that April is the cruelest month. KBOO News poet Dan Raphael hopes he was correct.
Sudden cacophony of plane engines Sunday night, like they were trying to strafe the moon. Maybe everybody had the news on real loud, or the movie channels were competing to see whose war flick could pull the most viewers. Hacksaw Ridge, The Longest Day, Apocalypse Now. All veterans are heroes. All police officers are heroes. Enforcement is where the jobs are. The protection racket, dragging a 69-year-old doctor off a plane United sold too many tickets for. The powerful guided by a belief in heaven which cannot exist without hell. A living hell, an incremental hell. If you've never not been hungry. I didn't know I was poor till I left my neighborhood. Yeah, man, I ran. This is getting serious. Russian roulette, Korean roulette, Chinese takeout. We'll teach them Arabs about feel awful. If killing people halfway around the world makes you presidential, I'm glad I'll never be one. War. What is it good for? Presidential profit. Say it again. For poetic justice and peace, this is Dan Raphael.
Who is the one member of Trump's cabinet receiving protection from the federal marshals? Secretary of State Tillerson? Attorney General Jeff Sessions? Nope, it's Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos. Because of a high number of threats, the Education Department will be paying the federal marshals $1 million a month to protect DeVos, the sister of former Blackwater CEO Eric Prince. This will further strain the department's finances, slotted for a 13% decrease under Trump's proposed budget. The last cabinet member guarded by U.S. Marshals was the director of the Office of National Drug Policy, which stopped being a cabinet position in 2009. And the volume of threats is likely to increase as DeVos withdrew student loan borrower protections put in place by Obama administration, reducing oversight on the third-party contractors who manage the department's $1.3 billion in student loans. The withdrawn memos increased audits of these contractors and linked their compensation to their efficiency and customer service record. American Federation of Teachers President Randy Weingarten said, quote, Secretary DeVos, with the stroke of a pen, has reinstated the Wild West of student loans where servicers get to play by their own rules and borrowers get fleeced. The department is currently in the process of awarding a large new servicing contract to a single entity.
And now, here's Climate Connections to bring updates about solar power.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. The future of solar energy in the U.S. looks bright. Although solar currently only provides about 1% of our electricity, Chris Namovich of the U.S. Energy Information Administration says the market for new solar has grown.
From essentially a minimal to non-existent market 5 or 10 years ago to what is now many thousands of megawatts per year.
Solar was installed at a record pace in 2016. In just that year, more utility-scale solar was added than in all the years before 2013 combined. Namovich says falling solar prices helped drive the growth, but there were other factors.
Among them are federal subsidies or incentives, primarily in the form of tax credits. There are also state-level policies that encourage renewables.
Namovich says the federal tax support for solar will be phased out over the next few years, and low natural gas prices make it harder for solar to compete.
In the near term, we see that there will be some trade-off between solar and wind and natural gas, mostly related to the timing of the various tax credits that both wind and solar receive and the changes in natural gas prices.
But in the long term, he predicts a sunny market.
In 5 to 10 or 20-year range, we see a pretty robust market for solar capacity growth.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Animals, including endangered species like ocelots and jaguars, do not recognize international borders in defining their own territories. Today, the Center for Biological Diversity and Arizona Congressman Raul Grijalva, co-chair of the House Progressive Caucus, sued the Trump regime and called on federal agencies to undertake a comprehensive probe into the proposed wall's negative environmental impacts. One reason for the rich diversity of the 2,000-mile borderlands is that government on both sides have protected huge swaths of the region, most of which is lightly populated by humans. One area that would be affected by the wall is the Coronado National Forest, which contains the greatest number of threatened and endangered species of all the U.S. national forests.
Human rights groups in India have expressed concern over their government's plan to deport Rohingya refugees. Thousands of Rohingya Muslims fleeing persecution in Myanmar are living in exile in India, but as Bismillah Gilani reports, Hindu nationalist groups have launched a campaign to drive them out of the country.
Tens of thousands of Rohingya Muslims in India who fled violence in their home country of Myanmar are now afraid they will be sent back. Officials in India's Ministry of External Affairs revealed last week that the government is working on a plan to identify and deport the Rohingya refugees. The reports came after some Hindu nationalist groups intensified their protest against Rohingya Muslims living in India. The Hindu groups view them as a threat to national security and have been demanding their expulsion. The report sent shockwaves through the Rohingya community and human rights circles. Raghu Menon is media and advocacy manager at Amnesty International India.
This came as a shock for us, because apart from it being a violation of India's commitment under international human rights law and refugee law, it would also go against the grain of humanitarian philosophy and policy that India has always applied to people fleeing persecution.
Rohingya refugees began arriving in India in 2012. After violent attacks against them broke out in neighboring Myanmar. The government, then led by Prime Minister Manmohan Singh, allowed them to stay in the country, despite opposition from Hindu nationalist groups. But since the Bharatiya Janata Party, or BJP, came to power in 2014, the clamor to send them back has grown louder. Violence against the Rohingya in Myanmar resumed last fall, with entire villages in the western Rakhine state erased by fire, allegedly at the hands of the military. But nonetheless, earlier this week, a traders group in the northern city of Jammu even threatened to start killing the Rohingyas if the government fails to move them out within a month. However, some political parties and Muslim organizations have come out in support of the Rohingyas, urging the government to immediately roll back the deportation plan. Bismillah Gilani, Free Speech Radio News, New Delhi.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Dan Raphael and Teresa Mitchell. The producer is Kyle Carisi. Special thanks to Oregon News Service, Free Speech Radio News, and Labor Radio. Our engineer is David Kesters. The KBOO Evening News Director is Zalos Marchant, and the Evening Public Affairs Director is Kanan Schlesinger. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews, and you can find us on Facebook and on Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR in Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Brian Pritchett.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO. At 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on Voices from the Edge, Joanne Hardesty looks at trauma-informed equity work and how it can help empower communities of color, immigrants, and refugees to advocate for justice. At 9, it's Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Between the Covers, Pulitzer Prize-winning author Paul Watson talks about his book Ice Ghosts, the story of the Lost Franklin Expedition of 1845. And at 11:30, on Words and Pictures, we'll welcome Farrell Dalrymple and his celebrated Dark Horse series, Pop Gun War, plus Ryan Alexander Tanner, who creates comics for social change. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate.
And now it's time for News from the Boo, the weekly segment from people inside of and around KBOO with news from your community radio station.
That's right. It's Wednesday. It is 5:46, and that means it is time for News from the Boo, our weekly roundup of items of interest here at the station and in the greater listening community. We are joined once again by Pamela Santos, our Director of Membership here at KBOO. Pamela, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, but it sounds like I still have that tail end of some allergies still. But
we'll soldier through.
I think people can hear me.
Yes, I believe so. Pamela, you have joined us today to tell us what's coming up for KBOO's amazing members, maybe the ones who are not so amazing too, but specifically the amazing ones.
They're all amazing.
They are all amazing. Yeah, if you're a member, you are amazing by definition. So for those folks in that group or folks who would like to become one of those people, what is coming down the pipe for them?
Okay, I got distracted because amazing should be trademarked for the Mets, by the way. Just, it's on my brain, sorry.
We will agree to disagree about that, but go ahead.
but I will just focus on right now, we have our spring membership drive that's coming up May 11th to May 24th. So that means right now we're deep in, well, not deep. We just started with our spring sweepstakes.
Tell us all about those sweepstakes and what very cool prizes people might win.
So the great thing about our sweepstakes is we have it before the drive so that we can subvert it, is how people usually have heard it called. Our drive is 14 days, but it's also the very ambitious goal of 134,615. So for that, I'm going to say that one more time. 134,615. We're trying to raise $36,000 with our sweepstakes. So with every $36,000 that we are able to raise before May 11th, we are going to take one day off from that drive and bring everybody back to regular programming. And the prizes, yeah. So did you get to see, I mean, the grand prize, I know I should do this backwards, but the grand prize is two benefactor passes to the Blues Festival. So this year, it's the 30th anniversary for the Waterfront Blues Festival. And so it's just honestly just going to be really special. Have you guys been?
I've never been.
It's going to be
amazing. It's a long-standing Portland tradition. And KBOO's been involved for quite a while, too, right?
Oh, absolutely. And this time, I mean, some of these artists, the nice thing that I like about the Blues Fest is I feel like it offers something for everybody. So their top headliners include Chris Isaak, Joss Stone, but I'm actually looking forward to Fantastic Negrito, who is this phenomenal, how would I call him, kind of like new soul kind of thing. One of his songs was used for an Amazon TV series, and he's also been known on different Tiny Desk concerts and all, you know, all throughout the internet. So I'm a big fan.
That's great. And for the lucky people who win this prize, can you tell us a little bit more about the perks?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So the nice thing, and you can tell me about this, Aaron, is I would say the best part is being able to get in early, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know what time, I can't remember right off the top of my head when general admission is, but you get in early all 5 days, 45 minutes before general. And so that makes a big difference, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And you get priority readmission. So if you got to leave, get out, actually not be in the sun, let's say, for how many hours, whatever you got to do, come back. You also get, it's this actually separate kind of priority viewing area too. So you have priority seating where there is shade and snacks.
And that's big because it can get pretty hot depending on the year. I mean, you know, it's sometimes said that summer doesn't start in Portland till July 4th, I think. It rains until, or I guess July 5th. It rains through the 4th of July. But it's all changed. Summer gets super hot starting in May. So Yeah, so it can be actually really useful to have a little bit of shade, kick back, cool off, have a snack, and then get back out and walk around.
That's a great thing, too, because you already get, with those passes, daily parking, beer and wine coupons. I mean, the whole nine. More information on that is on the Blues Fest website. And for that, honestly, you're getting so much for that grand prize. And I'll tell you really quick, if we can get time in for the first and second prize. The first and second prize. Okay, so first, Reitenbusch. We are going to have gift certificates up to $300 for accommodations during the weekday, day use of the Springs, and pretty much any of the other services they provide as well out in Reitenbusch. And we're doing the whole thing where I'm like, did you get to go?
We were just talking about this before you came in. Aaron has been to Reitenbusch. I've never been to Reitenbusch. I've only ever been to Cougar River Reservoir Hot Springs, which is much more rustic than Reitenbusch.
Yeah, to put it nicely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Reitenbusch, that's another Portland tradition. Yeah, my family used to go every year in the wintertime. It's absolutely lovely. A different experience in colder weather, but with the hot springs, you really could use this any time of the year.
And there's massage.
There's beautiful food. It used to be all vegetarian. I don't know if it still is, but yeah, great place.
Cool, cool, cool. And the second prize, I can even hear that in my voice right there. The second prize is Portland Center Stage. We have a pass for that, along with dinner at one of my favorites is actually this Japanese curry house called Kale. That's K-A-L with, I forget the accent on the E. But that's going to be great because you get to have theater and dinner out too. So,
and how does the Flex Pass work? What does that mean?
It means that you're able to take advantage of more than one show. So it's your choice. And I'm sorry, I don't have all the info about that. But again, go. This is almost the right time. Go to our website, KBOO. Hold on. Let me pull this back. So more of that information is on KBOO.fm/2017 Spring Sweepstakes. And we'll have more of that info. But I think the most important thing is it ends on May 10th. So that's going to be the night before the drive, as long as we receive postcards, increased donations, anything that you're letting us know that you're entering the sweepstakes up to 11:59 p.m. So web donations are the same thing too. You're going to be entered.
So we'll take entries can come in multiple formats then.
Yes. So here's the thing that can be a little bit confusing is they can click on KBOO. .fm/give or go on the website, click on donate. You can already be entered when you're a monthly member. So if you already have monthly deductions, you're already going to be included unless you tell us to take you out. And also, no purchase necessary. You can actually send us a postcard.
And if you call up during the membership drive, can you enter right over the phone? I assume yes, you'll become a member.
During the drive, that's when the sweepstakes is over.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's right. Okay.
So this is the kickoff for...
Kickoff. We've been getting amazing responses already. The letters have gone out to mailboxes. The one thing is, if you don't want to be entered, just let me know on my email, membership@kboo.fm. But mostly it's just kind of... to me, the nicest thing about doing this kind of work is I get to really get to know Portland in a lot of ways. And so I'm glad you keep bringing up that, these are kind of almost like Portland landmarks, right? Like kind of landmark events. And being the New Yorker that I am, and I'm going to, go down with those colors into the grave, I still get excited learning more about, you know, my new city. And I say new, it's 3 years now, but it's my way of just like, oh, okay, what is this new thing that I can kind of put out there and, you know, people are going to get excited about.
So for potential new members and renewing members, there's no need to wait then till May 11th.
Not at all.
We can get the donations rolling in now and then hopefully shorten up the actual membership drive and get back to programming.
Yeah, it's true. The worst thing that can possibly happen is you'll make a positive contribution to KU's future and you'll shorten the length of the actual membership drive. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, if we get to $36,000... we're definitely going to shorten the drive, so let's make it worth it. And I think the best thing that I think about this, too, is thank you for bringing up the win-win here, Brian, is just that it's another way to engage with KBOO. So you're listening right now. You're already kind of partaking in the content that we offer. But this is another way to just, you know, it's a two-way relationship.
All right. So one more time, what are those three prizes?
So the second prize, so we'll go from the second prize is the Portland Center Stage Flex Pass with dinner at Kale. So that retail value is up to $550. And that's including the dinner at Kale up to $100 in gift certificates. The first prize is Brighton Bush gift certificates up to $300, and the that's the retail value. And the grand prize is two benefactor passes to the 30th anniversary of the Blues Festival. And this year it's going to be June 30th to 4th of July.
Well, we only have a couple minutes left. Can you tell us quickly about the event that's coming up on the 22nd that we're going to be broadcasting from?
Great. So KBOO is broadcasting from the Inner City Blues Festival. So totally different, but the Inner City Blues Festival at North Portland's Eagle Lodge, and that's going to be from 6 p.m. till midnight. There's going to be live music, dinner, dancing, community info tables, and more prizes, oh, raffle prizes. The festival, The festival benefits healthcare for all Oregon and includes a silent auction. There's more information on Facebook. It's / healing the healthcare blues.
All right. Well, that's just about all the time we have. Pamela, thank you so much for coming in and letting us know about this. I am excited about these prizes. I'm also super excited about the potential for shortening up the membership drive. And as I'm sure everyone who, you know, has to listen to it and would rather get back to regular programming is also excited about that. So everyone, please get your entries and your membership pledges in as soon as possible so that we can do this whole thing right.
Yeah. And either way, don't forget to support these two great blues events as well.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Pamela.
Thanks.
Everyone out there, we will talk to you again this time next week. Have a great weekend.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Keep listening, and we got Right to Survive coming up next.